Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the TAG Immobilien AG conference call regarding the interim statement on the first quarter of 2019. At this time, all participants have been placed on a listen-only mode, and the floor will be open for questions following the presentation. Let me now turn the floor over to your host, Mr. Martin Thiel.
Yeah, many thanks, and good morning, everybody. Welcome to TAG's Q1 2019 conference call. I think today we can make it perhaps quite short. The last call is not so long ago. Just last month, we talked about the full year figures for 2018. Today, already the Q1 2019. I think most of you already had a chance to take a look at our press release and our presentation. Everything's, I think, clearly on plan, and operationally, that looks quite nice. Let's go through the presentation, which is also available on our website, and of course, afterwards, we have a lot of time to discuss any questions. Let's start on page four of the presentation. That's the highlight slide. Quick look on operational performance. Vacancy development in the first quarter, very comparable to last year, a little bit up from, in the residential units, 5%-5.2%, and in the total portfolio from 5.3%-5.6%. That's not unusual for a start in the year. As always, after inclusion of new acquisitions and with starting new CapEx programs for vacancy reduction, if you remember last year's development, a slight increase in vacancy, but clearly the plan is, and our clear expectation is that we'll reduce vacancy as in last year over the course of the year. Nothing unusual. Like-for-like rental growth developed nicely, and the like-for-like rental growth, including vacancy reduction, picked up from 2.6%-2.8%. The basis like-for-like rental growth was unchanged at 2.3%. A strong increase in FFO I. If you compare that year-on-year, that's a more than 12% increase. Compared to the previous quarter, FFO I increased by 1.7 million-39.5 million. Looking at NAV and LTV, I would say very normal developments during a quarter without any valuations. Of course, there was, as in the past years, no valuation in the first quarter. The next valuation will take place at half year, the next full valuation. Therefore, NAV was up from 17.32-17.54, and the LTV decreased by approximately 50 basis points because of our ongoing results and ongoing amortization from 47.3%-46.8%. So far, no acquisitions and no disposals in the first quarter, or I should better say, no major acquisitions and disposals. If you take a look in our Q1 report, on page six, you see that we have just acquired a small number of units, 35 units, and disposed some 12 units. Just slight disposals and acquisitions, but that's also very normal development for the start of the year. That should not set a trend for the full year. As always, we think that acquisitions, as in the last few years, will pick up during the course of the year. Let's take a closer look at the income statement. I'm now on page six of the presentation. The net rent increased by 2.5 million, and two main effects. First of all, net effect from portfolio transactions. This was an increase by 2 million. We had the closing of the largest part of the acquisitions last year, all in all, 2,500 units in the fourth quarter. For the first time, these acquisitions have been in the P&L. Like-for-like rental growth contributed approximately 0.5 million to the total net rent growth. Net rental income increased by 1.9 million, as we discussed, result of higher net rents of 2.5 million. As an opposing effect, we had slightly higher expenses from property management, mainly vacancy costs and also some impairment losses on rent receivables. Also a very normal effect for the start of the year as vacancy rates slightly increased. If you look at the development of other operating income and compare that with the previous quarter, you will see a strong reduction. If you remember, we had a one-off effect in the fourth quarter 2018, where we could release a provision for real estate transfer tax risks from prior years, and this was an effect of 6.2 million. Excluding this positive one-off effect in the previous quarter, you will see the numbers are very comparable. Already mentioned, valuation results was basically zero this quarter, and we will have the next valuation at half year. Please understand that we can give you no concrete guidance for the next valuation at half year. We will discuss the first results with CBRE during the month of May. Generally, we expect that the positive trend from the past 2 years clearly will continue. We see no let's say stagnation of prices or anything similar in our markets. So therefore, we expect definitely a positive development of the valuation result. But I hope you can understand that it's today too early to give an concrete guidance in million of euros or in percentage. Personal expenses increased quarter on quarter by 700,000, mainly due to the ongoing growth of our internal caretaker service, mainly in this case in Salzgitter. We had an additional nearly 100 caretakers that started. So therefore, the clear trend of internalization in the caretaker service continued. Other operating expenses decreased by 600,000 euros. Here we have one main accountant effect. For the first time, we had the application of IFRS 16, a new accounting standard that treats leasing contracts, and therefore we are from now on capitalizing leasing contracts in our balance sheet. If we take a look in the balance sheet, you'll see approximately 9 million of capitalized leasing contracts. In prior years, this was directly expensed in other operating expenses and to a certain part also in expenses from services. This is now, and this is an effect of approximately 400,000 euros capitalized. So therefore, our EBITDA increased this year or this quarter by 400,000 euros because of the first-time application of this new accounting standards. What you will see in a second when we discuss the FFO development, that we eliminate this effect from our FFO calculation. So the FFO is unchanged. We eliminated this 400,000 increase in EBITDA because we think this pure accounting effect should have no effect on the FFO calculation. But let me say this additionally. We will see how this is treated within the peer group, and perhaps during the course of the year we will change this treatment, not from the accounting side, but perhaps from the FFO calculation. Not really a material effect. It would be approximately 1.6 million for the full year, but for now the FFO calculation is unchanged and absolutely comparable with our FFO calculation in the previous quarters. Net financial results, cash after one-offs, improved quite nicely by 600,000 euros quarter on quarter, and the cash tax expenses in the first quarter of 2009 were slightly higher than the previous quarter at 1.3 million compared to 500,000 euros in the fourth quarter of 2018. Then I'm now on the next page, on page number 7, and here you can see what I just mentioned. We included a new line, reversal of effects from first-time application of IFRS 16 leases. That's the 400,000 euros that I already mentioned, which is now deducted. So this new accounting standard does not affect our EBITDA calculation, our FFO and AFFO calculation. I already mentioned that the FFO increased by 1.7 million, mainly as a result of our higher EBITDA, which increased by 1.6 million. And not only the FFO increased, also the AFFO increased even a little bit stronger by 2.3 million. That was the increase in the AFFO after all CapEx, so after capitalized maintenance and after modernization CapEx in comparison to the previous quarter. I'm turning now to page number 10, the financing structure. As in the previous quarter, the interest rate or the average interest rate for the total financial debt was again reduced slightly from 1.92% at the end of the fourth quarter now to 1.90% at the end of the first quarter 2019. And there's still refinancing potential. If you look on the right side of page number 10, you will see that we indicated the further refinancing potential. All in all, we have 408 million of bank loans maturing or where the interest terms are ending in the next 3 years. and the average coupons of these bank loans are between 2.6 and 3.7% per annum. If you look at today's financing conditions for a 10-year bank loan, we talk perhaps about margins, I would say on average between 80 and 90 basis points. And if we put the 10-year mid-swap rate on top of that, which is currently around 50 basis points, we end up at approximately 1.4% for new 10-year bank loans all in. So therefore, we should clearly have additionally refinancing potential in the future. I'm now coming to page number 12. A quick look at the what we think very strong development of the financing metrics. It's not only the LTV that has been reduced over the last years and is in the meanwhile below 47%, also, and perhaps for us even more important, the cash metrics improved nicely. We give you here the actual numbers for the first quarter of 2019. The ICR now strongly about 4 times at 4.6 times, and net financial debt in relation to the EBITDA now for the first time below 11 times at 10.9 times. Net financial debt in euro per square meter at a very low 446 euros per square meter. Our valuation in the portfolio is unchanged at 940 euros per square meter, which is, from our point of view, clearly conservative. Applying the current LTV of below 47%, this ends up at to the 446 euros per square meter, which is, as far as we know, the definitely lowest net financial debt per square meter within the peer group. Then I'm on page 15 of the presentation, where we give a split of rental growth and our CapEx allocation, starting with rental growth. So I already mentioned that the total rental growth, including vacancy reduction, increased from 2.6% now to 2.8%. The basis like-for-like rental growth is unchanged at 2.3%, and also unchanged is the split of this basis like-for-like rental growth, which you see in the small chart on the bottom left. So rent increases for existing tenants from the Mietspiegel, for example, was 1.3%. The effect from tenant turnover was 0.9%. And the modernization surcharge, so that means modernization programs for existing tenants, as in the previous years, still at 0.1%. This is clearly an outcome or result of our modernization strategy. As you know, the very largest part of our CapEx goes to vacancy reduction and not to modernization programs for existing tenants. And therefore, if you look on the bottom right of page number 15, it's perhaps not surprising that the largest part of our CapEx and maintenance goes in the first quarter and in the previous year to regions where we have higher vacancy. In this quarter, in this case, especially the Chemnitz region, which is a share of 20% of the total investments from the portfolio. Looking at the total investments, maintenance and CapEx development in euro per square meter, you see this on the top right of page number 15, you see that we are in fact unchanged. So analyzing the numbers from the first quarter of 2019, we end up at 19 euros. That's absolutely comparable with the 19 euros and 20 cents from 2018, and we expect to be this number in this region for the full year 2019. On page 16, you see the development of vacancy rates, as I already said, a slightly increase from the integration of the newly acquired properties that have, of course, a higher share of vacant apartments. It was more than 12% average vacancy rate that we acquired last year. So therefore, a development very comparable to what we saw last year, where we saw an increase in vacancy rate or a slight increase in the first quarter, and then the vacancy rate decreased in the upcoming quarters. So that's also what we expect for 2019. And then some final words on page 18 on the guidance. First of all, the guidance for the financial year 2019 is unchanged. So the midpoint of the guidance is in absolute terms at 155 million. If you look at the results for the first quarter of 2019, with 39.5 million, we're absolutely on track and the guidance looks absolutely manageable. But remember that we have included disposals in our guidance, and perhaps this is worth to make that a little bit more clear, because we received here some questions after the full year conference call. You see that in the first bullet point, that the guidance assumes, first of all, as always, no acquisition, and secondly, planned disposals of 2,100 units and these disposals lead to a total FFO reduction in the guidance of approximately 3 million. And we assume the guidance, the closing of these disposals at the middle of the year in June 2019. 719 units are already sold. That disposal that we published with the full year figures signed in December and closing as planned in June. So out of the 2,100 units, 719 units are already sold. And the 2,100 units, furthermore, include, as always, as in the previous years, 500 units from our ongoing disposal business. We will do the remaining part of this mainly non-core assets. So what is left after the 2,100, less the 719, less the 500 in smaller parts. So what we have seen is that we have here a lot of locations that we bring to the market, and therefore it is perhaps the most likely and the best way to sell it in smaller parts, but that should happen, as our clearly expectation, during the course of the year 2019. Anything else is unchanged, so FFO1, as I said, at 155 million, and the dividend per share is for the financial year 2019 unchanged at 80 cents. We're paying out now a dividend after the AGM next month in May of 75 cents, a dividend which is, by the way, tax-free, and compared with today's share price, that's a 3.5% dividend yield, which we consider, especially as it is tax-free, as a very attractive dividend yield. That's it from my side, a short overview about our first quarter results, and of course I'm now happy to take your questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press 9 followed by the star key on your telephone keypad. If you wish to withdraw your question, please press 9 star again. Please press 9 star now if you'd like to raise a question. And the first question for today comes from Manuela Martin, who's calling from Oddo BHF. Over to you.
Good morning, Mr. Thiel. Just two questions from my side. One is a bit to refresh my memory. Could you remind me who were the sellers of the 2,500 units approximately which TAG bought end of 2018?
Yeah, good morning, Manuel. Looking at the disposals, I would say from the last 2 years, we have not one typical seller. I mean, of course, we cannot disclose any names. Basically, I would say there are two types of sellers. Generally, these are as well private persons with larger real estate portfolios, as well as institutional sellers. The two types of sellers are, on the one side, sellers that are perhaps limited from a financial perspective. And then that's, of course, not easy if you're operating a portfolio with higher vacancy rates. What you clearly need to do is to do modernization work to modernize the apartments, not a luxury modernization, but you have to invest. And this needs to be done in most cases, especially at the beginning, in a first step, in full from equity. So this is, for us as a listed company, not really a big issue. But for especially a private person or a smaller company, not always possible. And the second type of seller is the type of seller that has enough cash, but is perhaps not the asset manager. For example, private equity companies sitting not directly in the regions where the properties are. That's what we think is very important if you really want to reduce vacancy, that you are close to the market. So therefore, that's our advantage that we have, that we combine on the one side the financial power of a listed company, and the other side really a very decentralized and very local asset management. So there is not one typical seller. There are these two groups, and within the groups, I would say they're really different parties who sell to us.
I see. Okay. My second and last question There's a lot of discussion going on around Berlin, expropriation, etc. Do you experience any spillover effect to your locations on what's going on in Berlin?
Mm-hmm. Not an extreme trend in the last 2 weeks since this discussion came up. But we clearly see the spillover effects in our Berlin commuter belts, I would say, since the last perhaps 2 years, even 3 years. If you look at our like-for-like rental growth in the Berlin region, which is a Berlin portfolio or a portfolio completely consisting of Berlin commuter belts or cities in Brandenburg and not in Berlin City, you will see that the like-for-like rental growth without CapEx programs, without vacancy reduction, was on average around 3.5%. So we already see this spillover effect. Perhaps there will be an even stronger spillover effect if we see further regulations in the large cities like Berlin. And on the other side, no rent regulations, for example, in cities like Brandenburg and Havel or Nauen or Strasbourg or Eberswalde, where our portfolios are located. But that's just a short period since we had this discussion. So generally, yes, the spillover effect. If this will come in the future from this discussion about expropriation or from further rent regulations, could be likely, but not really observable at the moment.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Kai Klose, calling from Berenberg. Over to you.
Yes, sir, good morning. I've got a short question on the CapEx measurements, as you mentioned, which you're doing in Chemnitz. Could you indicate a bit about the volume and the type of investments you're doing there? I'm just asking because in the last year you have been investing there already, so may you can give an indication how that has been progressing and also when you expect at which extent vacancy rates to react positively on your CapEx spending there. Thank you.
Thanks for the question, Kai. Chemnitz is a region where we're very optimistic to reduce it. Interestingly, in the Chemnitz region included is also the quite small city of Döbeln, with a little bit more than 20,000 inhabitants, which was in the past not really, let's say, the top location of the portfolio, but developing extremely positive in the last 2 years. So therefore, the CapEx programs also include a larger part, what we call quarter management. For example, in Döbeln, we also built a small supermarket, not because we want to achieve an extremely interesting return from this small supermarket, but this helps, of course, the quarter of the city to develop because it's attractive for tenants if things like what you need for your day-to-day life are available just around the corner. And there are a lot of programs, and this refers more to Chemnitz. For it's not a nursing home, it's more the idea of make it possible for elderly people to stay longer in apartment. When we, for example, modernize a full apartment block, and in the basement of the apartment block, we have a kind of nursing service, which is not our own service, but something external where we have a cooperation with. So very targeted programs, for example, for elderly people, and in the case of Döbeln, more targeted programs for younger families.
Thank you. And could you maybe specify or quantify?
Sorry, I missed that. Just to add this, the volume should be comparable with last year's volume in Chemnitz. And Chemnitz is, beside Gera, definitely again 2019 the region with the highest CapEx, because we have here nearly double-digit vacancy rates, and we should expect a reduction of the vacancy rate in Chemnitz, which was 9.6% at the beginning of the year, definitely more towards 9% or even lower during the course of the year.
Thank you. Because that was my second question, is it reasonable to assume that we might see a bit of a stronger vacancy reduction in both regions than in the next more in the next year, once we have completed these quartiers management activities?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it should already take place in the second half of 2019.
All right. Thanks so much indeed.
Thank you. If anybody else would like to ask a question, please press 9-star now. Please press 9-star now if you'd like to raise a question. Okay, our next question comes from Thomas Rothäusler, who's calling from Jefferies. Over to you.
Hi, good morning. Just a question on refinancing. Can you give us a rough idea, rough schedule, what we can expect in the near future and what you have considered in the guidance?
Good morning, Thomas. First of all, in the guidance, there's not assumed any additional early refinancing. So the guidance just assumed refinancing as the bank loans become due. So any early refinancing of debt would lead to a higher FFO contribution in 2019. What you should perhaps not expect is a very large refinancing exercise. I think we have done this in 2017, in 2018, looking at the current interest rate development. I mean, of course, we have very attractive low rates, and we don't expect that these rates pick up in the next month very, very extremely. So therefore, our strategy that we followed in the past, getting as close to the maturities as possible to avoid higher breakage fees, should also be something that makes sense for 2019. Let's see how this develops during the course of the year, and it could also be the case that we do perhaps a little bit more than necessary when we are refinancing acquisitions, but I shouldn't expect the 400 million maturing bank loans in the next few years to be refinanced in the next month.
So it's more topic for 2020 efficiently, I mean for P&L.
Yeah, that's a fair assumption.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I'll repeat one more time that if any participants would like to ask a question, please press 9-star. Please press 9-star if you'd like to raise a question at this time. Okay, Mr. Thiel, it looks like we don't have any more questions for today, so back to you.
Yeah, thank you, operator, and many thanks to you all for listening to our call. As always, if there are any questions left, please feel free to contact me or the IR department. We're happy to answer this. Have a nice day, and bye-bye from Hamburg.